What's up, everybody, and welcome back to Five Red Lights, episode 4. My name is Jesse Finver, and with me, as always, Howard Goldberg. Folks, we have a great episode for you today. This is Suzuka Week, Japanese Grand Prix. We have a lot to talk about. A lot to talk about. Really excited. Howie, how we doing, first and foremost?
We're doing all right. It was an interesting weekend.
Interesting to say the least. And like I said, a lot to talk about. And honestly, I just want to get right into it. And we're going to start from the beginning. I feel like qualifying is going to take a lot of... It's going to determine a lot this season. It always determines a lot. But I think more so than ever, it's going to determine a lot. And we saw something special from Max Verstappen this weekend.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We saw one of the best of all time at his best, and that's exactly what was on display on Saturday in Japan. Max Verstappen put in one of the great qualifying laps we've ever seen. It was right up there with Lewis Hamilton in Singapore with the famed lap of the gods. It was right up there with Ayrton Senna in Monaco when he was over a second faster than Alan Prost. It was right up there with Michael Schumacher in Malaysia in 1999, which, if you're not familiar with it, he crashed during qualifying in Silverstone, missed that race, then 6 more races because he broke his leg. Malaysia was the first race back for him, and he put the car on pole by over 9/10 of a second. So
that's why he's one of the best of all time.
What Max did at Suzuka the other day was firmly right up there. And when you look at those names, it's no wonder why those are the greatest drivers this sport's ever seen.
Dude, so, we've been worried about Red Bull and Max, and we've been talking about that a lot. And
yeah, the big thing has been Red Bull's in trouble.
Yeah, and he kind of shut us up, like, immediately. He was like, oh, you're worried about me? Bet. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm going to just go and put one of the greatest pole performances of all time. It was unbelievable. I mean, McLaren, it felt like they were just cruising. Like, it was just a foregone conclusion.
They looked Orlando like and in Oscar, Q1 and Q2, they had pace in hand. All throughout practice, they looked very fast. And, I mean, yeah, qualifying came. And we just saw that when it came down to the last laps of Q3, neither of them were able to hook it up. Oscar had a terrible Sector 1. He was 3/10 down on Max and Lando in Sector 1 alone, and then came back with the fastest Sector 2 and fastest Sector 3, absolutely blazing fast, but it just wasn't enough to make up for his slow first sector. And Lando just didn't. I'm not actually sure exactly where Lando missed with his pace, but he was so close. It was coming out of that last corner. If he had like 200 more meters of road before the finish line, he probably edges out Max for the pole. And then it's a completely different weekend. So yeah, it was a very special qualifying session.
And I mean, and not to jump ahead, but like, even like the start of the race, when you say like it could have changed the whole weekend, even the start of the race, it just felt like the way that they were positioned, it just felt like Lando didn't even try to pass Max.
Well, Max knew. Yeah. So I guess now we're getting a little into the race.
We don't have to.
We've covered what we had to cover from qualifying, right? I mean,
it wasn't Max anything was else
noteworthy. You know, it was, as you expect, Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, top 6, and then Max. So that was like the top 7. Isaac Hadjar stuck himself in there right next to Lewis Hamilton. So that was the top 8 of the grid.
And I did want to bring up, before we move on, I found it fascinating, Liam placing ahead of Yuki in qualifying, or they were right there. Yeah, he was one spot ahead of him, right? 14 and
they would 15. Have been lined up next to each other if Carlos Sainz didn't get the grid penalty for impeding Lewis. So yeah, they were 14th and 15th.
I just found that interesting. I was like, yeah, like, oh, like we made the change. He goes to the V-carb, yeah, and
at the face, it's interesting. However, that's better than Liam had qualified in any of his sessions in the Red Bull. And it's worse than Yuki had qualified in any session in the V-carb. So that's the other way of looking at it, right?
Mm-hmm. And absolutely.
So it was good seeing Liam have a confidence in himself again. He looked different in the car. He didn't seem to be questioning his inputs. And it was nice to see him be able to make that switch back. And I look forward to him showing some pace in the coming races.
Dude, back
to tracks he's been at, you know, more. Yeah. Obviously, he's raced at Suzuka. But yeah, I'm looking forward to what he can do with that stability. And right there in V-carb, what Isaac has been able to do with all the instability that's been in that team and the senior team has been really impressive. And the fact that he hasn't been impacted at all as a rookie with what's going on the other side of that garage speaks volumes about what he's capable of and what we might see coming from him.
Absolutely. We were so worried that it wasn't just going to be him getting swapped, but completely booted off of the track. And I'm just really happy that he not only didn't get kicked off and replaced completely, but he actually, you know, made the cue. He had his best race of the season, or at least his best qualifying of the season. So I'm happy about that. I mean, I think qualifying may have been more interesting than the race itself. Because the race was kind of a snooze.
No, spot. there were things to talk about from the race. Oh, I mean, thing we started getting at the start. Max angled himself. Max knew that with the conditions of how the track was, where it had been wet, it was drying for the start. And so, like, there was a dry line, but there wasn't much grip. So he knew nobody was sending it around the outside of turn one. All he had to do was get to the inside of the track. So he angled himself towards the inside of the track, which coincidentally is the side of the track that Lando is starting on. Mm-hmm. So all he had to do was cover off Lando, and he had the lead. And so that's exactly what he did. And it, for the first time, I think ever, there was no changes in place in the top six of the grid. They just drove around like a parade.
I meant snooze fest, man. Like,
it was. And one thing really stuck out to me, which was as we've gotten further down the development paths for these cars in these regulations, it's now the last year in these regulations. So everybody's had a lot of time to figure out how to optimize the car and make it the most aerodynamic as possible.
Right.
And what that does is it throws a lot of air off the back of the car, making it hard to follow. And so at the beginning of these regulations, the FIA was saying, oh, these regulations are going to make it easier than ever to drive behind the car in front of you. And as they've developed these cars, that has proven to be very untrue. And it's at the point where it's hard to almost even stay in DRS range. And that's what has been turning a lot of these races into processionals. These cars are so big now, and with the amount of dirty air getting thrown off the back of them, it's impossible to follow. And so the combination of that, the size, the tracks that they're racing on, it's just not conducive to the same racing that we saw even 5 years ago in the last set of regulations.
Suzuka is definitely a track that's hard to pass on as it is, right? I mean, it's not Monaco, but like it's still a difficult track to pass on, but you're right. The cars are much bigger than they've ever been.
No, it's
are
not
they getting
just
it smaller
track,
though with the
it's
new regulations?
Not just this track.
No, I know. I know.
It's a lot of tracks. Like the FP1, the P1 podcast, which is hosted by Matt Gallagher and Tom Bellingham, they were talking about it, looking at the schedule, and they were just like naming tracks left and right. I think there were maybe like four or five tracks that they weren't concerned about overtaking.
Right. That's not
like
good.
That's it out of 24. So yeah, no, it's in a bad spot. DRS is going away in the next regulations. It's all going to be active aero. So what that means is basically from inside the cockpit, they're going to be able to adjust the front wing and the rear wing to help with either providing more downforce or more drag. So depending on whether you're on a straight or into a cornering section, you can adjust accordingly.
I like that.
So like, hopefully that might be a way to help these cars follow closer in the twisty bits, is just being able to throw a lot more downforce on the car when you need it. I'm not positive about the size. I think the cars might be getting a little bit smaller, but I'm not positive on that.
Is it just because the engines are so big?
And... hold on. There's one more thing I want to mention.
Yeah.
It all goes back. It's part of the reason why Fred Vasseur said this year's championship is going to be decided in qualifying, is right, because it's so hard to pass. And it's becoming a uniform thing across all tracks, not just a select few like Monaco and Hungary and these tighter, twistier tracks that have historically been tough to pass on. So
this is something the FIA, I mean, everybody needs to figure out. This I feel like this is like not just like a, I feel like all sports go through something like this at one point or another, where there's almost like a crisis that needs to be solved, where the competitiveness of the said sport is becoming
an
issue.
What is a catch?
Right, what is a catch? The NBA,
the
3-point shooting.
Too long.
The games are too long, exactly.
Load management.
Yep.
Yeah.
And 3-point shooting and stuff like that. So this is a problem. I mean,
the NFL, the last 5 minutes are too long.
Let me ask you this. You watch a lot of IndyCar. How much smaller are those cars than a Formula One car? They look smaller. Are they a lot smaller?
I don't know.
Because they look a lot smaller.
Without a direct comparison, without seeing them next to each other, it's so hard. There's no reference for seeing them.
I asked that because in my experience watching IndyCar, the cars look a lot smaller, and it just feels like there's a lot more passing. Now, maybe the passing
has to do that with the fact that it's a spec series. So the only thing that's different about the cars is the setup the team decides to put on it. It's the same engine.
Yeah.
There's two engines you can pick from, Honda or Chevy. It's the same chassis. It's the same tires. You get two options. You get a primary and an alternate. So like, it's very much like F2, but with a little bit more freedom to optimize your package, if you will. But I don't know. It's the competition, though. Put aside the fact that Alex Palou is absolutely dominating IndyCar right now, the competition is generally far higher. It's extremely unusual to see a driver win 3, 4, 5 races a season.
Sorry, and so I just looked it up, and I am so wrong. And Indy cars are slightly larger than F1 cars. F1 cars are lighter, but I think what you're saying about the setup, the being able to customization and everything, and maybe just the tracks are...
Every car has the same amount of horsepower, same amount of torque, same braking capabilities. It's all the same equipment.
That makes a lot more sense then. But it's a problem in Formula One. It is. And I don't know how they're going to fix it. I think it's definitely going to be different next year with the new regulations. That different has to be good at this point. Because what's going on right now, we can't have more of what we just watched, where it's just, as you said, a processional. The dirty air stuff is interesting, though. It really is.
That, you know, that brings me to my next point, because talking about clean and dirty air, McLaren's pit strategy made absolutely no sense to me. And when I say that, I want to know why, when you have two cars against one, with Lando and Oscar against Max at the front, why do you not strategize to get at least one of them in clean air at the front of the grid? When Max has to pit at some point, which means one of your two cars is going to have an opportunity to lead the race, have clean air, and be able to show its full potential and pace. And that's when you're going to win a race at Suzuka, not by overtaking Max Verstappen. Because let's face it, that's probably not happening on the road anyway. So,
yeah,
it's their failure to do that is, to me, far worse than whatever happened later in the race with Oscar thinking he was faster and had a chance to attack Max. Because if they get their pit strategy right, that's not even a problem later in the race. Lando is up the road.
I know. I agree. I think that at the same time, I just don't like them. I don't like them. They've just kind of picked Lando. I think what they did was they were just like, you know, we can either let Lando finish in second, right?
Look.
Or.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, just let him finish in second or and maintain that lead. Or you take the risk of in the World Drivers Championship, or you take the risk and you're like, all right, Oscar, if you think you're faster than him, which he was faster than Lando, he was, go get him. But at the same time, Lando also, he looked faster than Lando, but he also didn't make up that time. Maybe he was just intentionally holding back because of the race strategy. But it's just right. Felt like this season he's been faster than Lando. Am I wrong?
My opinion is that, in general, Oscar has better race pace. Yeah. I was curious about this, actually, so I did a little digging after the race. There, it's a well-known fact that Lando regularly out-qualifies Oscar. He has out-qualified him probably two-thirds of the time they've been.
Right, playing. We've talked about this, yes.
And if not more. However, there's been like 7 or 8 times that Oscar started behind Lando that he's passed him in the race and finished ahead of him. On pure race pace, not team orders or anything, just on pure pace. There's a couple other times that, like, for some reason they ended up being swapped with that, whether it was pit strategy or some other way. But when you look at the reverse, Lando's only done that twice. He's only been able to pass Oscar on track twice. And yes, I know there's a smaller sample size that he has to work with, but the fact that Oscar's seemingly able to do it so consistently or be put in a position to say to the pit wall, hey guys, I'm faster than Lando. What are we doing here? And I mean, look, a lot of the times with their papaya rules, they say, we're going to hold station. And there's nothing that he can do about it except try to pass him on track. So there's been times that he loses out because of it. But I've noticed personally that I think he has better race pace over the 2 years that they've been together.
I'm with you, dude.
And once he starts being able to out-qualify Lando on a somewhat consistent basis, at least 50-50, I mean, look out, because he's going to be a serious championship contender.
We've been saying it for as long as the past 4 episodes, we've been saying it. Oscar, show us. Show us you can do it. And he's done it once already. But if you want to be in front of Lando, if you want to be the one that McLaren is focusing on for the World Drivers Championship, I'll qualify him. It's as simple as that.
And look, Oscar said it as much himself. After he was asked about those radio messages that happened during the race, and he said, look, at the end of the day, if I want to be in front of Lando, I need to qualify better. Yeah. He knows it. And I'll just give my take on the whole radio situation and whether they should or should not have swapped. I think it's a no-brainer, yes. And it's a no-brainer because everything was so tightly packed, you know, from Max to Oscar was 3 seconds, 3.5 seconds at most, you know? So it's not like if you swap Oscar and Lando and Oscar couldn't get Max, you're not asking Oscar to wait half a lap to give the place back. You're not asking him to drastically slow down.
Was it 15?
Lap 42.
Yeah. So it's 10 laps.
Lap 42 of 53.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's a no-brainer because if Max finishes first, Lando finishes second, and Oscar finishes third, which is how it happened, how it was at the moment, and how it finished. Max outscores Lando by 7 points in the championship. If Oscar finishes first, Max finishes second, and Lando finishes third, Max only outscores him by 3 points. If you're Lando Norris, which one would you prefer? I think you would rather have Max score four fewer points on you, especially considering right now Oscar is like 45 points behind him in the championship.
So that's
okay. He's not 45 points. He's like 25 points, but
it's 62, 40, it's 62, 61, 49. So he's right now he's 12 points or 13 points behind Lando. And if you put Oscar in front of Lando there,
that makes it much closer for the drivers between them. But
yeah.
And that's why it's so tricky for McLaren. That's what they're balancing is if we take these points away from Oscar, from Lando, theoretically in this round, we probably have to find a way to make it up to him. How do you realistically do that?
Yeah, how does Lando
I understand it from their side, but I also think, especially given the landscape of this Red Bull is being talked about as the fourth fastest car on the grid on a good day coming into this race by just about everybody in the sport, right?
All right.
You're now in a situation where that car is in front of you and it's looking like there's nothing you can do to pass it. So with that in mind, you have to start thinking constructors, oh crap, what if Max can start hauling this thing to the top of the podium every week? And then Yuki Tsunoda can start sneaking into the points, getting 6, 8, 10 points a week. I mean, teams might start being in trouble for the constructors, not just the drivers.
I think it's interesting thinking about, obviously, this is coming from Zach and McLaren team being like, we want Lando in front. But there's also like a point where you say, like, would you rather be down 7 or down 3 or be outscored by 7 or 3? And it's a really good point. And obviously Lando's not going to be in the moment, Lando's not going to be like doing this sort of algebra, this calculus, and like figuring this out while he's racing around the track. He's not thinking about that. But it disappoints me that McLaren isn't thinking like that. And
they were, though.
Maybe they were. I'm sure they were discussing it, but the fact that they didn't do it disappoints me. Because
I think ultimately what stopped them from doing it, though, is that it would have been a 13-point swing in favor of Oscar between Oscar and Lando.
He won.
Yes. But like we're saying, Matt, you're going to lose 4 fewer points to Max, but to your teammate who's in the same car, you're also going to lose 13 points.
What does that
you're going to lose 10 points instead of gaining 3.
What does say about McLaren and their belief in Oscar, do you think? Like, he said, I have the pace.
It says I think in that situation, it says less about their belief in Oscar and more about this is what the situation you guys put yourselves in. It would be a little bit unnatural for us to tip the scales right now.
And if maybe and if it was somebody else other than Max, look,
I would have loved to see. I'm on the record. I think they should have gone for a race win, given the position in the championships. It's the third race of the season. You don't know what's going to happen. You think you have the fastest car, but you need to go get as many points as you can right now. So I think they should have done it. But I understand for the political reasons why they didn't. I just don't like why.
I'm with you. I agree. Well, Max came in first. Oscar came in second. Lando came in second. Oscar came in third. I wanted to bring up Ferrari and Leclerc. I was watching the race and I was texting you. I mean, you're a Ferrari fan. Like that's your team. And I was like, it just feels like Charles has just been kind of not going through the motions. Because Ferrari's been fast. You know, they came in, they won the sprint. That was Lewis, though. But like, no, fast, like, I mean, they're in the
top
four.
If you take the sprint session out of them, they're firmly the third fastest team. I mean,
they're in fourth by like
whether it's a going, lot. And they haven't beat Max this year. Yeah. So that
brings me to my point. What is going on with Charles Leclerc? It just feels like, because like Lewis, he has a little bit of a built-in excuse, right? It's a new team, new car. Charles,
for now.
But and that excuse is going to be running out soon. But Charles has no excuse. And I mean, obviously, he's been very testy. He had another funny moment with his team over the radio. They're obviously
they wanted him to use an engine braking mode, and he's like, "Yeah, you told me that already." And there's a reason I'm not doing it on purpose.
I'm not doing it. But like, I don't know, man. It feels like Charles is just there, and Ferrari is just there, and expectations were so high, and we talked about how Red Bull we thought they were having the fourth fastest car, but they have the best driver on the track, and they've had all of the issues with Liam Lawson and Yuki taking over, and they're still 14 points behind Mercedes. Shout out Mercedes. They've been great. They've been really great. But Ferrari,
you know what?
It's just been really interesting.
You know what's really interesting about what you said about Max, the best driver? Coming into the season, all the talk was about Ferrari probably has the best driver lineup, right? Charles Leclerc and seven-time world champion Lewis Hamilton. How can you beat that? Ferrari, McLaren, right?
Both of them.
And they both look lost at the moment with the car that they have. Yeah, okay, it's hard to totally say Leclerc looks lost, right? He finished fourth at Suzuka. No, sorry. He didn't finish fourth. Both of the Mercedes were ahead of them.
No, he finished fourth. He finished fourth. George and Kimi came in fifth and sixth.
Oh, my God. Got amnesia. Yeah. It was a late night. But, no, he did that. He had an incredible pace, actually, in China with a broken wing. So, like, if you take the disqualifications out of it, like,
and yeah, it's like
weird
15
strategy
points.
In Australia. So, like, it's have they had the start of the season that you'd like or expect to see from Ferrari? Absolutely not. But like, I think it's been a weird one. I think it's hard to look at it at face value and be like, yeah, they've really been bad. The drivers, you know, I think there's been a lot of circumstances. The team has put them in pretty tough situations.
For sure. Which we've been harping on that for all four episodes at this point.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to bring that up. It's just been weird. It just feels like, I mean, he was like 8 seconds behind. What was he? He was so far behind. Oh my God. He was even further. He was 16 seconds off of Oscar at the end.
Yeah, no, those front three were in a different league.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
The scary thought is that Max was holding up the McLarens.
Yeah.
Both of them.
So very definitely something to keep an eye on that I'm going to keep an eye on. It just felt weird watching Leclerc and how passive and not aggressive Ferrari was this weekend. So there are some other storylines we wanted to talk about.
I think the rookies.
Yeah, the rookies. Very impressive.
I mean, okay, biggest rookie storyline, I think, obviously, Jack Doohan.
Yeah. I think you have some thoughts about Jack. Arguably,
Max Verstappen aside, story of the weekend, right? He gets taken out of the car for FP1 by the team because they want to get their Japanese reserve driver into the car, Ryo Hirakawa, who had a great FP1 session, by the way. That was awesome to see him go so fast at home. But it was very puzzling. Why are you taking the rookie out of the car in a track he hasn't driven at in 6 years? People are like, but he had driven there before. He's not going there cold turkey.
He drove
there in 2019, 6 years ago in Asian Formula 3. That car has like 210 horsepower. A Formula 1 car has over 800.
It's a different sport.
That is literally a quarter of the horsepower. It's not quite as pronounced, but it's almost like the difference between flying a private jet and a fighter jet. So you can't legitimately point at that and say that it is contextual experience. That has no relevance to the Formula One car he got in this weekend at that circuit. So to take him out of the car, it should have been Gasly. It should have been Gasly out of the car in FP1. Let your rookie get to terms with the car, which he's still learning in general. Forget about just at the track. And so he then got in the car in FP2, obviously felt pressure to catch up. So on his second flying lap, he tries to take turn one with the DRS open, which is a whole other conversation, shouldn't have ever happened. But we won't go into that. I think he knows how big of a mistake that was.
I think everybody does, but yeah.
One of the biggest, highest speed impacts I've seen in Formula One since I started watching 5 years ago. And it was jarring to watch. It was
crazy.
As a spectator, I froze. I didn't know what to think. And it was one of those moments that you hold your breath. And quite frankly, I hadn't held my breath like that for a crash since Silverstone. The start of Silverstone was that 2022, maybe?
21?
That's the year. No.
No, that was when
Zhou Guan Yu. It's the year that like he flipped up against the safety barrier.
Yeah, it was 22, turn one.
Yeah, and it was the car like rolled side over side like 4, 5, 6 times, and he ended up pinned between the tire and the fence, tire barrier and the fence. And the fact that he got out of that unscathed, like
insane.
People, that was a heart in mouth moment. Like, and this is the first time since that 3 years ago that I had felt legitimate fear for the driver in the car at the time of the collision.
Yeah, and man.
I know we all like to take big steamy dumps on the FIA, and they deserve it in a lot of the scenarios, let's face it. But what they've done for driver safety and the safety of these cars really shouldn't be overlooked. Things like the Halo and strengthening the monocoque structure, redesigning how those are made, has gone such a long way in helping keep these drivers safe.
Absolutely. And
they deserve credit for all the things they do wrong. They deserve credit for the things that they're doing right.
Yeah.
That's what I want to say on that.
I can't believe that it wasn't worse than it was. He's so lucky that he didn't flip over, that it was just this, like, he just slid. Sometimes you just get lucky, man. And I think that this is one of those times. And I don't want to say that it was because he didn't race in FP1, but, you know, I don't know. It feels like early to be given, like, taking a guy out of the seat.
Right? So I just looked it up. Any guess how fast Jack Doohan was going as he was coming into that turn?
He definitely braked.
And keep in mind, and anybody who has driven Suzuka on a sim racing rig, any kind of set with pedals and wheels, turn one at Suzuka, it's not a hard braking zone. It's honestly not really a braking zone at all. It's more of a lift into turn two where you brake. So, okay. Do you have a guess?
Speed? Based on that, I'm going to guess 170. Higher?
He's going 206 miles an hour.
My God, man.
When the back of his car just slid out from under him. And the fact that he got out of the car, walked
away from it. It's a miracle, dude. It's a miracle that he got out of the
back
car.
Into it the next day to qualify and race is unbelievable.
Unbelievable, man. That being said, these things can't keep happening with Jack.
No.
He just has not been. I know he's a rookie, and we slammed Red Bull for making a hasty decision, but Alpine is not Red Bull. And have they even gotten points yet?
No.
Your bold prediction was that Pierre was going to get points this week, and that did not happen. Pierre finished. He finished 13th.
Finished a couple places ahead of Jack. And I think it's really unfortunate, because I do think that Jack actually had a very, very nice recovery from an impossible start to the weekend. He had a rough qualified 19th, but worked his way up to 15th in the race. And yeah. I mean, like, at a place that it's hard to overtake at, he did a really great job on a long second stint on his hard tires, and he did a good job holding that position.
Yeah.
So
shout out him.
You have to commend him, but it sucks. It sucks seeing him in a position where, before he even got into the car at preseason testing, his job was under threat. And I don't think there's really anything he can do. I don't think there has been anything he can do. I think it has been decided that when those six races are up, Franco Colapinto is in the car. I think that's partly because of what they felt he showed last year, which I have some thoughts about. And I think it's partly because he brings huge sponsorship and marketing opportunities along with him. He right now is, I mean, Bortoleto's in the sport now, but like, he's like the South American market, you know, as an Argentinian. And you don't have to look any further than the reception he received in Brazil, of all places. I think the rivalry between Brazil and Argentina is pretty well known around the world.
Yeah.
And it's not exclusive to soccer. So to see that kind of reception, it shows the popularity of somebody like Franco Colapinto. And that's, Alpine is going to want that.
Yeah. I mean, especially as a team that hasn't scored points yet, you need to have some positivity.
And you have to make money in some way. You're not going to make money from the constructors. You have to make money off the track.
So, and we'll talk more about Colapinto as that approaches. Because
as he's a potential
rookie. It feels inevitable, but call him that. Let's talk about the rest of the rookies. Yeah, let's talk about the rest of the rookies real quick. Let's just run through them. Kimi was arguably the fastest guy on the track at one point.
There is a race pace graphic that came out after the race. He had the fourth best race pace behind the two McLarens and Max.
He was awesome.
And he was just about even with them the whole time. So
as you said though in our texts, it's not his time just yet.
It's coming before we think. He's like the fourth rookie ever to finish top six in his first three races.
And the youngest to ever lead a race.
Joining Lewis Hamilton and Bruce McLaren among that group. Youngest to lead a race. He set a new track record at Suzuka for fastest lap during a race. So, yeah, it was a great weekend for Kimi.
Who else did we shout out?
Great long stint on the mediums. Incredible pace on his hards.
Yeah.
Isaac Hadjar. Got his first points in Formula One this weekend. Has been very impressive the whole season. Has had some strategy work against him. Otherwise, he's been incredible. Behind Kimi, easily top rookie. And quite frankly, you have to start not taking away from Kimi, because what he's doing deserves recognition too. But Isaac isn't in a car that is supposed to be doing as well as the car Kimi's
doing. He's in a V car. So, yes, it's impressive.
But you have to raise your eyebrow at that a little bit and give him his flowers. And also, as a rookie, for not letting whatever's happening on the other side of that garage, I know I referenced it before, but having the mental strength to not let all the noise within your team impact you as a rookie is so impressive.
And not only that, but after what happened in the first race, because it was Isaac who crashed early.
Crashed on his way to the grid.
And you had Lewis Hamilton's father come and give him a pep talk. And you had the cameras following him. He was clearly just beside himself, like definitely crying. And like, I mean, who wouldn't be? Your first ever F1 race.
Marco said that it was embarrassing that he cried. And a bunch of his fellow drivers had to come to his defense for that.
Yeah, you know what? I hate that from Helmut. Like, this is a kid, a young kid who's finally getting to live his dream. And in his very first race, he experiences some terrible luck and terrible weather. And the way he's rebounded has been fantastic. And I'm proud of him. And I think that he has done a great job. And he has been driving the hell out of that V car. And another rookie that's been driving the hell out of a car that we had no expectations for. That me personally, I said they belonged under 50 miles of shit.
You did.
Ollie Bearman is driving the hell out of that Haas car, getting points for them. It was 1 point, but that's better than no points. And I mean, he's just kicking Esteban Ocon's ass. Like, it's very impressive what he's doing.
Well, like we said about other drivers who've changed teams, you've got to give Esteban a little bit of leeway.
Do we though? Because this is also Ollie's first time in the car. No,
no, he drove a race for Haas last year. He's been their reserve driver for like 2 years.
I stand corrected.
He's been around that team and their car. He's driven FP1 sessions for them. He drove a race for them last year. That was when Kevin Magnussen got too many super license points, penalty points. So he got banned for a race. So that's, yeah. So, but I mean, Ollie has come in and been right on it. I don't think we could have, despite his experience in that car, could not have been expected to do what he's doing, I don't think, in that Haas, especially what was expected of that team this year. So very impressive for him. Just want to see it continue, you know, making Q3 in that Haas. We would be talking about that as a great achievement if Nico Hülkenberg or Kevin Magnussen did it last year.
Dude, so, they're in sixth place. Yeah. They got 15 points. Yeah. That's awesome. You know, I thought they were going to be dead last with Sauber. Sauber has 6 points. Alpine's got none. V-Carb with 7. Aston Martin with 10. Haas with 15. They're 4 points behind Williams. That's
Haas fighting for best of the rest.
Yeah, I'm.
What a world.
I was a little harsh. And listen, it's early in the season. There are 21 races left. But good for Haas.
Hey, Gene, we look like rock stars, not Rangers.
Next up, we got Bahrain. And we got upgrades coming. We have a track that everybody's familiar with. And let's just get some quick thoughts. Who do you have?
Bahrain is where pace shows.
Yeah.
True pace comes out at Bahrain. 3 DRS zones. And long straights, fast corners, and a couple slow corners. McLaren. It should be McLaren.
Yeah.
I mean,
they have the pace.
It's not one of those circuits that, yes, obviously a driver can make a difference anywhere, but it's not like a Suzuka that Max is going to make 0.4 of a difference.
Right.
You know, still going to be very centered around the car, what the order looks like. I think look out for Mercedes. It's hard to discount Ferrari. They looked incredible in preseason testing there. It's so hard to handicap it, but McLaren, I think, is winning. Look out for Charles Leclerc. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
He is known to be a Bahrain merchant. He has one of the most famous Formula 2 wins of all time at Bahrain. He came in and pitted with like 9 laps to go and ended up charging through the field and winning. And after he came into the pits, he had like 40 seconds to close. He did it in like 10 laps. It's unbelievable.
I'm looking at the stats for Bahrain. So 57 laps. You're right. There are a lot of long straights. There's some turns as well in the middle. But this looks like a great track. It is a great track. I've watched plenty of races there. Do you know who has the lap record?
It's probably like Bottas or something.
Nope. Pedro de la Rosa in 2005, the year after the second ever race at Bahrain. Yeah. So this is, it looks like, and then Michael Schumacher won the first one, I believe.
Okay. So that's what it is. Yes. So the Charles Leclerc F2 win at Bahrain.
Yeah.
Wasn't in the feature race. It was actually in the sprint race. And the reason it's such a famous win is because he pitted during the sprint race and still won.
Which that doesn't happen. Yeah, that's crazy.
He started sixth on the grid. And quickly went to the front. And his tires, obviously everybody's tires started going. His started going. He decided to pit. And it dropped him down to 14th.
Oh, God.
With 9 laps to go. And he overtook 13 cars and won by a second and a half. It's, You just like, you can't make stuff like this up. Charles Leclerc, incredible, obviously, driver, and has the track record there. Obviously, that win in F2. You saw the battle he had with Max Verstappen in 2022,
yeah.
Which he was playing with food with Max, just toying with him at the DRS lines. So I'm excited. If that Ferrari has anything to give, I think Charles Leclerc gets the most out of it and puts it on the podium.
This is a must podium. I'm putting it out there right now. It's a must podium for Ferrari. If they can't get one of their guys in the top three at a track like this, it might be a long season.
Dark times for the Tifosi.
Yeah, it might be a long season for Ferrari. So is this a must win or can't lose?
Honestly,
I think it's a must win.
They bring upgrades to Bahrain and still shit the bed. It's honestly might be time for them to just start packing up for 2026. You're not going to be
with Charles and Lewis on the team. You're going to throw away
the rocket ship for next year. If you're sitting fourth, what are you going to do? Keep putting your resources into this year?
No, I mean, you make a good point. It's just that it's Ferrari.
Obviously still early. I think they probably go full throttle until like Monaco, at least. Everybody wants to win Monaco. No matter what they decide to do, they're going to try to win at Monza. Whether they're still focused on 25 or if
they won last year at Monaco, right?
Yeah, they won Monaco and Charles won Monaco and Monza last year. He did the Ferrari double.
So, yeah. All right. So McLaren. I agree. I think
what's your podium? What do you think podium is?
I'm going to go. I gotta believe in Oscar. And so I'm going to believe in Oscar. And I'm going to have Oscar 1. I'm going to have Max 2.
Okay.
And I'm going to have Lando 3.
All right. You ready for mine?
Yeah. Hit me.
Are you sure you're ready?
Oh, I'm buckled in.
Lando, Oscar, Kimi. You ready for that?
I love it. Oh,
Kimi
be
Antonelli
great.
Also has plenty of experience there from junior formulas.
Yeah.
F4 Middle East, Formula 2. Pulled an absolutely beautiful move on Ollie Bearman at turn 4 in F2.
You posted that on our account, right?
Yeah, that can be found on our threads. It's our first post.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a beautiful move. But yeah, Lando, Oscar, Kimi.
All right, you hear it here first. We're going to have a Kimi Antonelli podium.
First podium.
If that happens, I would be very excited. I would love that. But I will say, I want Ferrari. I'm not a Ferrari guy. I am a McLaren fan. I want Ferrari to show out this weekend.
It's like the NBA. It's better when the Knicks are good.
Yeah.
F1 is better when Ferrari's good.
Absolutely. So let's. It has happened a bunch on this podcast where I have talked shit about somebody or a team, and then they've come out the next week and they have proved me wrong, whether it's Haas or Max Verstappen. Ferrari, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. That's all I'm saying. So, all right, that's it for us. You can find us on Threads. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on TikTok. Follow us everywhere. Like, subscribe. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And we will see you next week to react to Bahrain. Peace.
Do, 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 do.